One of my all-time favorites is my good buddy who's coming up next, Doug Lamorese, Cleveland.com. Doug, thanks for taking the time. I led the hour here with, you know, kind of my synopsis of the Ezekiel Elliott story of the way I remember it. And just to paraphrase, I remember a shy kid when he got there. I remember a warm kid through 2014, and then I left. And that was it. I didn't see 2015. I didn't see him on a daily basis. I had heard that an ego had accompanied him in a very big way, and why wouldn't it? This is a kid who, you know, was at the ESPYs and all these things. Everything happened so quickly, and now we get this end game with him, and we get a 6-game suspension for the NFL. You know, spent a year investigating this. It's my contention, Doug, that the NFL doesn't do this unless they have it. If you will, give me your read on Ezekiel Elliott, the person. You covered him day to day for all 3 years he was in Columbus, and then kind of the end result of what came down yesterday.
Yeah, it's hard because, I mean, you can't draw any kind of straight line between the personality you see as a football player and what may or may not happen off the field in a very serious way that leads to, this kind of suspension. So, like, I have not written on this because I don't know all the facts. But the one thing that I will say is that I did think in 2015 – When he called out the coaching staff after the Michigan State loss in the 2015 season, and I thought he got like a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
People seem to say like, yeah, you know, you're not afraid to speak the truth, and it's like, and I called out the coaching staff. Everybody called out the coaching staff. That was bad play calling. I did not give him credit for that because I did not view that as someone standing up for his team. I thought he was mad personally because his Heisman chances were hurt. And he didn't get the ball enough. And I think that was a more real read on that situation. I didn't think that was Ezekiel Elliott team leader. I thought that was like angry star player. So I do think there was some ego. And again, I mean, you know, it would happen to a lot of us. But
yeah.
But again, I don't want to draw a line between I thought he could sort of be that way maybe as a college football player, and now he's been suspended for 6 games because of something related to a domestic violence charge. So it's hard. I don't know about the other stuff. It's like one of those things. I don't necessarily believe anybody in this situation.
Yeah.
Certainly, I don't know exactly what's going on with Ezekiel Elliott, but certainly you don't trust the NFL to handle any of this correctly. So, I think it's very delicate and very almost hard to talk about.
You know, Doug, and that's why I like doing it, because I like exploring things like this that are the you remember that? Of course, you remember it. I mean, Urban even praised him after that.
Yeah, I didn't believe that either.
He said, "Yeah, he was probably right." He goes, "Yeah, Zeke was probably right." And I thought, "Really, Urban?"
I thought it was after the fact, trying to make excuses for him. That was, there are people around Ezekiel Elliott who are not happy for personal reasons relating to Ezekiel Elliott and his personal goals that they were concerned about that at least as much as they were concerned about whether Ohio State won or lost the game. And I was surprised by the whole thing. I don't know exactly why Urban threw in with him that much of, you know, now it's okay for players to rip coaches. Is that really the world we're in now? That does not seem like the world I thought Urban Meyer was going to want to inhabit.
No, let's be honest. The 2015 year for Urban was one of the worst coaching jobs he's ever done, from the quarterback mishandling to that at the end. I mean, the whole thing was just it was probably his most talented team ever, and he just, you know, this is a guy who I think is, you know, he's there with Saban. I think most of us believe that, but from start to finish, he really botched that thing, I think, and probably still has a lot of regret to it, but he was managing a lot of ego. I mean, and that, I guess that gets back to the point of this, you know, when we talk about Elliott and if you just even remove the domestic violence, you just look at some of the behavior that he's had. I try to articulate what it's like to be a superstar at Ohio State in Columbus. And then to me, that would be times a million if you're a superstar with the Dallas Cowboys. And all of this by 21-22. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, it is. And he's a very, very good football player. I mean, nobody can deny that. But he's also had a lot of very good things sort of happen for him in his life that, he became a star in the playoff running through some gigantic holes, created by that offensive line and the national championship run that a lot of people would have run through. And then he gets drafted to play behind the best offensive line in the NFL. So the thing that I think about with him is that he has been very fortunate. He had the injury early the one season with the wrist, and he fought through that. But he's just been very fortunate, and there's a lot of talented guys who go to Ohio State. They have to wait their turn. They have major injuries. Things happen for them that aren't their fault. But a lot of good things have happened for him his whole football career. And the one night against Michigan State, the one night he felt like he didn't get the ball enough, he publicly complained about the coaches. The one night, the one time in his Ohio State career that a game and an opportunity didn't go exactly as he wanted it to go, he publicly popped off. This is not a guy who had a million bad things happen to him. One. And people gave him credit for that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he got a lot
of credit. That's not what I thought.
Yeah.
That's not how I read that situation.
No, I was with you on that then. I'm with you on that now. He's Doug LeMaurice, Cleveland.com. He joins us on the Mercedes-Benz of Bedford hotline. Let's before I get to your thoughts on the Browns, what we're seeing early on there, let me stay in Columbus with Ohio State. This is a team that, you know, looking at number two, top five in the country, kind of consensus. Most people think they'll be back. To me, this is the JT Barrett referendum year. I think about the swing of JT. I love the narrative of this, like the swing of how he can be viewed. And it's not... it's not fair, but life's not fair. I mean, he can be viewed as a top five Ohio State player of all time if he has a great season, and he can be viewed, or he could be viewed completely the opposite way. This is a kid who in the spring they were, you know, fans are calling for the backup quarterback, and this guy's going to hold every record that matters at Ohio State from a quarterback perspective. Are you seeing early in camp an offense that takes full advantage of his skill set? I know that's the objective, but are you seeing in what you're seeing and who you're talking to that you're going to get a JT Barrett at his full potential this year?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is we don't see anything because we don't get to watch practice. But the way that they're talking about him, it seems like they are going to take the deep shots, which they have to do just for the offense to work at all. It seems like they feel like he is throwing it better and they are catching it better. And the one thing that he talked about and that everybody has written about is that he felt like he overthought things last year, and he's going to try to not do that this year. A lot of the hesitation, we saw him double pumping, not letting it go. I think he's almost going to simplify it back to 2014, where it might be first read, fire it. If it's not there, run. So on one hand, I don't know that they're going to throw it all over the place because I think he might even scramble more as a dangerous run threat. But I'm not, again, we don't get to watch practice, so I'm not going to be 100% believing it till I see him out on a field throwing the ball, ripping it, being confident. It's all in his head, you know? I mean, he doesn't have the world's greatest arm strength, but it's in his head. He can rip it when he needs to. We all said that. Two-minute drill, third and 11, the kind of stuff when he needs it, he rips it. But then when it's second and nine and he's not sure if the guy's 100% open, he holds it, double clutches, and then there's nothing.
Don't you think?
So if he comes out and rips it, he's good to go.
Don't you think the other thing that we don't talk about enough, and certainly on the Barrett issue, it would be this, is that he had Ezekiel Elliott, and he had Michael Thomas, and he had Devin Smith in 2014, and Jalen Marshall, and they're all in the league. Like, he had a boatload of guys, and that you're going to have confidence that Devin Smith's going to get a step in 2014. You might not have confidence in the receivers they've had the last 2 years, and to me, that's the biggest glaring weakness, is that they just have not developed. It seems like they've recruited, but they have not developed receivers there the last couple of years.
And that's the hard thing, too. Again, since we don't see it, it's like, okay, well, everyone feels better about the receivers. Well, Paris Campbell, K.J. Hill, and Terry McLaurin were all around last year and didn't do much. And now they're supposed to do a lot. And Ben Victor and Austin Mack were true freshmen last year and didn't do much. Now they're sophomores, and they're supposed to be the answer. So, listen, man, they don't have the leading pass catcher on the roster from a year ago is Marcus Ball, the tight end.
Yeah.
You know, their receivers who were back had like 11 catches last year. These are not guys who have done it. So, yeah, guys get better. Obviously, they're talented. They were big recruits. They get better. But we have to see it a little bit. I am not just going to buy it that Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day sprinkled pixie dust on the quarterback room and all the receivers got three times better and it's solved. So I understand why people are picking Ohio State to win the national championship and that kind of thing. They're really good everywhere. I still need to see this passing game before I believe it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Another thing I'm with you on, Doug, is the way that the Browns are being built and the process that I'm intrigued by it, as I know you are. But all, we have talked about this before, about how your plan can run up against reality. And the reality is you run a business. And you got this kid, number seven, who's a quarterback neophyte, just really hasn't started that many games. And yet he looks good against the third string, and he makes some throws. And I said earlier in the show, he's not a mirage. He has the skill set that you need to succeed in this league, and specifically in this division. What is your view on the Browns handling DeShone Kizer over the next couple of weeks as they lead up to this season?
Yeah, I mean, and it's just that it's all about him. I mean, it doesn't. I don't care if Brock Osweiler is 40 for 40 in a preseason game or 0 for 40. Like, it doesn't. I don't care what Brock Osweiler does. And after Cody Kessler kind of bumbled away. He didn't seize the opportunity here in camp, so I don't care what he does. It's all about Kizer. If you think it's better for his future and the team's future, you play him. If you think it's not better for his future and the team's future, then you don't play him. You wait. So, and anything else doesn't matter. That's the thing. Jimmy Haslam gave this whole organization another path on this season. So I don't care who makes them 6-10 and who makes them, 2-14. It's not what it is. This is the make DeShone Kizer, put him in the best chance to be successful. So whatever that is, do that. And I think they should do that. And the thing, and I'm sure you have talked about this, I thought the thing in the exhibition game, beyond the throws, is what happened before the throws. And you saw this at Notre Dame. The way he is in the pocket,
yeah.
When the pocket starts to fall apart and he climbs the pocket and doesn't run and doesn't get nervous and finds a little lane and steps up, Brock Osweiler and Cody Kessler don't do that right now. So that part of it, there are things that he's showing he can handle in the face of an NFL defense that I think are very positive.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's not a mirage. It's just going to be about the interesting thing about this, of course, is this: he was not their first choice. I mean, he basically fell to them. They saw value, so they picked him. I commend them for that. But now you see some potential in him, and maybe you can turn him into something. And I'm with you. I think there's everything legitimate there, but this has to be done the right way. Otherwise, it can all go off the rails. I'll get you out of here on this. You mentioned this, and it's fascinating to me. Jimmy Haslam, ultra-competitive guy. He's ran through regimes here. We know that. I was stunned. It's the right thing, but to publicly say, I don't think we're going to be, I don't know what we're going to be in 2017. Talk to me in 2018, 2019. To basically do a two-year, you use the word punt, I think that's it. I mean, you're building something, and you hope that you hit on things. But to basically say, I'm not going to worry about the record for 2 years in the NFL, no one's ever done this. I mean, this is unprecedented. Now, maybe the Jets are doing that now, and it kind of looks like maybe the Bills are doing that now, so maybe people are following Cleveland's pass with draft picks and hoping you hit on them. But this is kind of revolutionary to have an owner publicly say that, don't you think?
It is, and so I think it can be hard. I think a lot of people don't believe it because it hasn't happened. But I believe it because it's the only thing that makes sense. They went so far the other way of firing everybody so quick. It does make sense. And, yeah, you nailed it, Bo. Other teams are going to do this now.
Yeah.
I think the Browns, a little bit, have changed the game in the NFL because you see Garrett and Kizer and Peppers, you see how they tore down the salary cap and then rebuilt with some free agents. You see all the picks they have next year. And the trade-off is you have to be willing to throw away two seasons. But you've been throwing away seasons for almost two decades. You just haven't done it with a plan. So
yeah.
This is a plan.
Mm-hmm.
All the people who were going crazy about 1-15 last year and thought they just stunk, they did stink, but they didn't just stink. They stunk with the plan. This is year two of the plan, and then absolutely hold them to everything in 2018. If there isn't real progress, every week competition, at the very least a fight for a 500 record, then it's failed, right, on some level.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a plan, and I think from Hugh to Haslam to Sashi Brown, they all understand that, and that is what is happening here. And fans, you don't have to like it, but at least you have to acknowledge it. So please do not get caught up on what quarterback is starting what preseason game,
yeah,
or whether you won or lost by a field goal in week six, because they're not caught up in that. And the reason they're not caught up in that is because they see a bigger picture and they think it's the only way it's going to work here. And
I think it makes 100% sense.
What's the line in Superbad? This whole thing's bigger than you? Right?
I mean, that's, how can you not see it?
That's the thing. The whole thing's bigger than you. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about who's starting the third preseason game. The whole thing's bigger than you.
What it is.
Appreciate your time as always, buddy, and appreciate reading you at cleveland.com. He's Doug Lamarese. Thanks for the time, pal.